It's the Kim Monson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
I find that it takes work to get your brain around these ideas, and it takes work to engage in these conversations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
With what is happening down at the State House, I used to think that it was above my pay grade to read the legislation, and it's not.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
I see big danger in as much as we will be giving an unelected bureaucrat the power to make rules about what we inject into our body.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation and welcome to the show. I am Kim Monson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Monson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can email me at kim@kimmonson.com as well. Be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter. It comes out on Sundays. That's where you get the first look of all of our upcoming guests, as well as our latest op-eds and Sounding Off with Kim Monson podcast. And we'd appreciate it if you'd go over to Facebook and give us a like as well. Big show planned for you today. We'll go through some headlines. We'll also talk with Bill McCaleb. He is stepping forward. He is running for House District 6 here in Colorado. So we'll chat with him in this first segment. Second segment, Carl Dierenbach has contributed a chapter to Unmasked 2020, Colorado's Radical Left Turn and a Warning to America, which is a new book that will be published in September. And he is breaking down the COVID-19 Wuhan virus, Chinese Communist Party virus numbers. And so we'll talk with him in the second segment. Third segment, Rachel Gable. She is our agriculture expert. She writes for the Fence Post. And we'll be talking about our food supply. Specifically, I have some questions regarding our pork supply. So we'll chat with Rachel in the third and fourth segment. The I'm a Trumpster bus tour, the minority bus tour, will be making a big announcement on this show tomorrow morning. So be sure and listen in for that. And as we look at these issues, we look at them as freedom versus force, force versus freedom, or the new favorite, and that is fear. It is never compassionate to take other people's rights, their property, their freedom, or their livelihood via force, whether it's with a weapon, policy, unpredictable and excessive taxation, or fear. My friends, if something is a good idea, you should not have to use force to implement it. And that is why critical thinking is so important. And the bedrock of critical thinking are these questions: what, why, when, how, where, and who. Producer Steve, how are you doing this morning?
Yes, I am. I'm here.
Are you here? I hope you're here.
It helps to have the... Oh, never mind.
I got a great team that I get to work with, and that is Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie, and all these people at Crawford Broadcasting. And thank you to each of you for making this happen every morning. And thank you to each of you listeners. You are treasured. You're valued. You have a purpose. Today, strive for excellence and take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. Our inspiration for today is from Aristotle, Greek philosopher, and polymath during the classical period in ancient Greece. He was taught by Plato. He was the founder of the Lyceum, the Peripatetic School of Philosophy, and the Aristotelian tradition. He was born in 384. He died in 322 BC. And a polymath, just in case you didn't know, I had to look it up, is an individual whose knowledge spans a significant number of subjects, known to draw on complex bodies of knowledge to solve specific problems. With this is what Aristotle said. He said, "Excellence is never an accident. It is always the result of high intention, sincere effort, and intelligent execution. It represents the wise choice of many alternatives. Choice, not chance, determines your destiny." What do you think of that one, Producer Steve?
You're on a roll. You keep finding words that are thousands of years old, and yet they apply to...
Today.
Here and now. Hey, all right, you just came to me, and my mic wasn't in the mix. You know what it is?
What?
That persistent nausea again.
Okay, so last night was the third night of the Democrat National Convention. I was at a meeting, so I did not catch all of it, but I did catch Elizabeth Warren, and then Obama, and then Kamala Harris. And I was absolutely astounded that Obama, who supposedly was studied constitutional law, continued to refer to our country as a democracy. And our founders made sure that this was not a democracy, because democracies can actually get to the point where you have rule by the mob. And so we are a democratic, constitutional republic. And not once did Obama refer to America as a constitutional republic. And as you all may remember, after the Constitutional Convention, Benjamin Franklin went out and was met by, I think it was the wife of the mayor of Philadelphia at the time.
Exactly.
And she said, Dr. Franklin, what kind of government have you given us? And he says, a constitutional republic, or a republic, if you can keep it. And so we, you know, clearly these people that have been in charge of our educational system have been teaching our kids that this is a democracy, where that basically is 51% of the people could vote to take the 49% of the other people's stuff, and then or destroy it, as we've seen with these mobs here in America right now. The other thing is they very flowery say the words that we love to hear. We love our country, unity, you know, this country that we love. But yet underlying all that were all these divisive words. And Obama actually mentioned the words Black Lives Matter. And we all agree that Black Lives Matter. And I know it's poo-poo to say that all lives matter, but they do. But so he brings that up. And what has happened is this idea that Black Lives Matter, that movement has been hijacked by Marxists now that are destroying our cities. They're trying to destroy our country. And my friends, I think most all of you know this now, but if you go to Black Lives Matter, the official organization, and you click on the donate button and you take a look at what they're, you know, what they stand for, which is basically Marxism, and Marxism basically gets rid of the individual. Can you say face masks on everybody? It gets rid of the individuality of each person, and it gets rid of property rights. But if you click on and donate to Black Lives Matter, they don't even hide it. The money goes to Act Blue, which is the big fundraising arm of the Democrat Party. And so we are at a time for choosing, my friends. This is one of the most important elections of America's history. And you may or may not, you know, like each Republican candidate that is on the ticket, but you must vote Republican. You must encourage those that you know to vote Republican. We have seen in the past that many Christians and many veterans do not vote, need to make sure that they vote. And then what we do is, once these people are in office, we stay engaged with this to make sure that we start to shrink this government. And I am so excited that we have people stepping forward here in Colorado that care deeply about our state, that care deeply about the direction of our country. And one of those people is Bill McCaleb. He is on the line with me, and he is stepping forward to run for House District 6 here in Colorado. Bill McCaleb, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Kim. Thank you so much for having me on again. I truly appreciate it, and good morning, everyone.
So these are very important times for both our state and for our country. And you are stepping forward. And why, Bill McCaleb? Why are you doing this? Because do people look at you and say, are you crazy?
I've been called crazy more than once, before I started doing this. But it's all about returning kind of reasonableness and balance to the legislature. I think those two words have been lost in understanding with some of the current residents of the state house here in Colorado. And, you know, when I moved here 20 years ago with my family, yeah, I was here because it was an opportunity professionally for me to come. But more than that, I had two young children. We were looking for some place with an unbelievable you know, kind of lifestyle, and we certainly found it here in Colorado. I just think that we're kind of losing some of that right now with respect to the legislature that is currently seated. And you know when the legislature has to pass initiatives that are kind of quote unquote late at night and
on Sundays and as well.
Yeah, exactly. that are not consistent with things that have even been voted on by the voters. You know, it's like, hey, that they're no longer working for us; they're working for themselves.
Well, and, you know, I no longer am calling these folks elected officials. They are elected representatives. And I think many times some of these people, and it, I've seen it, I served on city council for 4 years, that start to think that, oh, I'm here so I can work to make your life better. That is not what government is supposed to do. They're supposed to make sure that government stays limited, the individual is big. The government protects our individual rights, protects the state house, protects the people so that we have safe neighborhoods, and also doesn't become so encroaching on our businesses, Bill McCaleb.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, but I have to say, you know, when we put together the, you know, some of the initiatives that appear on my website, and that's preservecolorado.com, but it really is about preserving the Colorado way of life. It is about you know, kind of getting away from what I had just talked about in terms of, you know, the current legislature, you know, voting things that aren't consistent with the voters' wants. But beyond that, all of the issues kind of have changed, and so kind of the number one is though now safety and security.
Right.
And I just. It's just unbelievable. I mean, when your constitutional right to protest morphs into riots, morphs into out of control mobs that deface the property of others, ends up being looting, arson, and even to the extent of what we saw a couple of weeks ago up in Portland, where they attempted to kill the police department. Or the police officers inside of a precinct by locking them in and then trying to burn the building down. You know, that's just not what Americans are about. We're just not that way. And you know, this whole idea. Now I think that we have an initiative here in Denver where there's a defund the police out, and it's like when you see what their security or safety force is. You know, it has no authority of any kind. So why have it? Number one, and number two, does that mean we're just not going to have any rule of law? It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, it truly is unbelievable. And so that is why we do need to get reasonable people that bring balance back to the state house down there. Bill McCaleb, how can people get more information about you?
You can get a whole lot more information about me by going to the website. PreservingColorado.com. Also on Facebook, if you go to the website, it'll take you to Facebook and Twitter. And I have things to say about a number of things. The closing of restaurants early, the whole idea of this idea of defunding police. I talk about a number of different things there. But if you go to the website, you learn more about me, you learn more about the issues, you learn more about what I think makes me different. I'm an older guy that has been in business for a long time, so I know how to solve problems. And so that's kind of the spot to go, preservingcolorado.com.
Okay, and that's preservingcolorado.com, preservingcolorado.com, correct, Bill McCaleb?
Yeah, that's correct. Thanks, Kim.
Okay, very good. Well, we will talk to you again very soon, Bill McCaleb. In fact, we are going to record a Sounding Off with Kim Munson podcast that we'll be rolling out this weekend as well. So we will talk to you soon, Bill McCaleb.
Thank you so much. Once again, good morning, everyone. And thanks, Kim, for having me on. I totally appreciate it.
And that is preservingcolorado.com. Before we go to break, one of my valued partners is Hooters Restaurants. And I think the Avs won yesterday. I had them on, and they were up. So I think that they won. And if they did, that means they're moving on the playoffs. But, you know, these are beautiful Colorado days. Hooters Restaurants is a great place to just go and watch some sports, They open up their patios, and it's just a great I think respite from all this craziness that's going on. They have a happy hour Monday through Friday, 3 to 6 p.m. and there are 5 Colorado locations. And they are, let's see if I can remember, they are Loveland, Westminster, Aurora, Lone Tree, and Colorado Springs. They have specials every day for lunch. Go to order.hooters.com for more information. That's order.hooters.com. And we're going to go to break. When we come back, Carl Dierenbach has written a very important chapter for this new book that will be released in September, and it is Unmasked 2020, Colorado's Radical Left Turn, and Why America, let's see, what's the... And a warning to America. So we'll be right back with Carl Dierenbach.
Metropolitan Total Property is more than landscaping. Locally owned and operated since 1987, their team is proud to be your neighbor and live in the community. Metropolitan Total Property stands behind their work, and your complete satisfaction is their top priority. Kim Munson highly recommends Metropolitan Total Property for landscaping and more. She was one of their very first clients way back in 1987. Be sure to check out MetropolitanTotalProperty.com for their complete menu of services. Again, that's MetropolitanTotalProperty.com.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lorne Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lorne Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lorne Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lorne Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And go over to Facebook and give us a like. There is a very important book that will be released in September. The co-editors on this are Charles Heatherly and former State Senator Kevin Lundberg. And they've asked a number of different individuals here in Colorado to comment on what happened in this last legislative session. And one of those people that has contributed a chapter is Carl Dierenbach. And to get this book published, it's a very grassroots effort. Freedom Fi from the Independence Institute, that is their fundraising arm that people can go in and raise money for different projects, is raising money for that. So today I'd recommend that you go to Freedom Fi and put in Unmasked 2020 and contribute a little bit to help this very worthy book be published. So, Carl Dierenbach, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Kim. Glad to be here.
So, your chapter in the book, what is it about, Carl?
It's about the response to the coronavirus and the modeling that Colorado has used to justify their responses, and specifically the modeling and how POLIS relies on it and how the model is inaccurate and how it causes POLIS or it enables POLIS, depending on which way you look at it, to practically do anything in response to coronavirus and justify it.
And the modeling that we have seen that has been used to basically shut down businesses and really wreak havoc in people's lives. It seems that we're now far enough into this, Carl Dierenbach, that instead of using modeling, we could use real data. What's your thoughts on that?
Absolutely, we're there. Absolutely. We have data from all across the country, places that have hit hard like New York, places that weren't hit hard early on but then peaked like Florida and Texas, but now are coming back down. So we have an idea of what this thing will do, what COVID will do to society. And that's not even counting going into Europe and looking at what happened there, particularly Sweden, where they never locked down and they seem to be through it. But none of that information gets through or gets used in decision-making in Colorado because we are still relying on the model. And the key reason why we're doing that is because the model it's insane. The model started off matching about what the Imperial College study, Imperial College London study did at the beginning. And in the beginning, that was 2.2 million lives in Colorado would be lost because of the epidemic, which would be about 39,000 in Colorado, which is bad. But then for some reason, their modeling group changed that to 80,000. So right now, Colorado modelers think that the coronavirus will hit harder here than anywhere else in the world, and it just skews everything Polis does.
So one would have to ask the question, why would they continue to rely on modeling that just doesn't make sense?
And that's because they believe in it. There's a couple reasons. One, since there's 80,000, they think that 80,000 people could die if we opened up completely, and there's less than 2,000 deaths now. They think that completely opening up from here on now would result in tens of thousands of deaths. And so they believe that model. And another reason why they believe that model is it's structured that the model is never wrong, because the model predicts anything from if you 100% social distance, no one else dies, to if you don't do any social distancing, 60, 70,000 more people die. And then whatever happens in real life, they go back to the model and look at it and say, oh, 3,000 people died. That means you must be at 68% social distancing. And so to control that, we should social distance some more or social distance some less. Well, it's pretty meaningless, but it gives them that parameter of having a model tell them what to do and that they scientifically know what's going on, when I really don't think they know what's going on at all.
Well, you know, another thing, Carl, and I had Pam Long on earlier this week, and that is something they don't even seem to take into account, is the deaths of despair. And when people lose their businesses, when they lose their jobs, and hypertension goes up, heart attacks go up, stroke, suicide. And so it seems irresponsible to me to rely on modeling that just isn't really seems to be working out, and then just totally ignore the destruction of people's lives by the policies that they're putting forward, Carl.
Absolutely, absolutely. I wrote Complete Colorado back in June. I wrote a whole piece about how there's probably 1 to 2 lockdown deaths for every 2 or 3 actual COVID deaths. I mean, there are so many reasons. And I looked at it back then by looking at ER visits, which has plummeted worldwide. And I was looking and finding anecdotes of doctors worldwide saying, yeah, heart attacks have stopped and strokes have stopped. The occasional one we do see is much worse than normal. And like places like New York, we're seeing a massive jump in in-home deaths, because people were just scared to go to the hospital. And I looked at some studies that said if you just delay ER visits by like 12 hours, 1 to 2% more people who visit the ER who would be admitted to a hospital will die. And that's a tiny percentage, but when you multiply that by worldwide, including Colorado and including the U.S., people who delay going to an ER because they're afraid of COVID, that effect becomes a big driver of deaths. And at the time I wrote it, there were maybe 80,000 coronavirus deaths in the country, and there were probably 30 to 40,000 lockdown deaths of the type that exactly what you were saying. And that's even taken into account that there were less than normal visits to the ER because there were less traffic accidents. So that just means the effect of lockdown deaths was more pronounced.
Well, and you know, another question, Carl, is human beings are social beings. And actually at my church on Sunday, the pastor talked about isolation and what that can do to people. And I really am concerned, particularly our elderly. I know that they can be vulnerable, or we think they're vulnerable to COVID-19 and certainly need to be careful. But the fact that they might just be totally isolated, there's something there that I think can actually contribute to a decline in health there. I don't know if there's any science to that, but it sure seems to make sense to me, Carl.
That makes sense to me, too. And there's, watching all the lockdown effects through time, there's been a lot of things like that where there's speculation in the beginning, and as you go along, you start to build data from it. Another example would be like places we're seeing that usually handle, and this is one of the saddest parts of the whole affair, places that handle child abuse started seeing a drop in calls. So all of a sudden, there's less and less child abuse out there at a time when people are stuck at home and there's a lot of stress. That didn't make any sense, and people started thinking, okay, this is looking bad. This is looking like a lot of people aren't being caught doing this. And turns out schools are a huge source of reporting that kind of activity and getting kids help. And I heard Dr. Scott Atlas, who is now on Trump's team, COVID response team, the other day, say that they calculate like 200,000 cases of child abuse along the country have gone unreported, and that is just tragic.
Oh my gosh, it really is tragic. So, well, Carl Dierenbach, this is absolutely fascinating, and you've written this chapter for this this book that is being published, and it is Unmasked 2020. I've got it right here. I should know the title because we also contributed a chapter. It's Unmasked 2020, Colorado's Radical Left Turn and a Warning to America. And so they're doing a Freedom Fi crowdfunding for this. And people can go to Freedom Fi Unmasked 2020. And we'd really recommend that people help contribute for this very important book because there's a number of authors that have commented on a variety of different subjects. And Carl Dierenbach, this is a very thoughtful chapter that you have contributed to the book. What's the final thought that you'd like to leave with our listeners?
We just can't rely on these models. We have real-world experience. I mean, if I could say one thing to Poles, I would just scream at them, maybe Sweden. You know, take a look at there, because if you think 80,000 deaths are out there or 70,000 deaths are out there, if you look at Sweden, who went through it all, came out the other end, are at zero deaths per day or one death per day there, they had a tiny tenth of that. I mean, if Colorado followed Sweden, we only have a few hundred more deaths before we are out of that, and we might even be less than that. So I would just have tell them to look at the world, look at what's going on outside your bubble, and see that this is not as bad as you think it is.
Okay. Well, Carl Dierenbach, thank you so much for sharing this regarding your chapter in the book. And again, go to Freedom Fi Unmasked 2020 and help contribute to get this book published. Carl, thanks so much. We will talk to you again soon.
Okay. Thank you, Kim.
Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management. What is going on in your life?
Oh, well, you know, I don't think anybody wants to hear about my whole life on your show, do they, Kim?
Well, only the parts you want to share, Jason, only those parts.
Well, you know, I'll share the part that might be related to their finances. You had asked me the other day, you know, kind of what about these indexes, like what is the Dow, what is the NASDAQ, the S&P, how do they differ? And, you know, one thing that's kind of interesting, if you look at the Dow, that is an index of 30, you know, very large companies. You know, you've even got some technology in there, Apple, Microsoft, Boeing, United Health, Home Depot, Goldman Sachs, McDonald's, and the like, very, very large companies. And like the Russell 2000 is almost the exact opposite, Kim. That's 2,000 stocks that are smaller companies, smaller growth type companies. And yet I find it's interesting a lot of times that the Dow and the Russell 2000 behave very similarly to each other. And I think it's interesting for the listeners out there that might, you know, have access to somewhere they could see a daily chart of the indexes. You could go to Yahoo Finance or stockcharts.com. It's very interesting. You look at the shape of the chart of the Dow and the small caps, and it's very, very similar. Very similar. It doesn't look the same as the S&P. It doesn't look the same as the NASDAQ, but they look very similar to each other, which I've always kind of found interesting, and I've noticed many times over the years. But I'll tell you, I haven't figured it out. Why does the small cap index behave the same as, like, probably the, you know, the staunch big large cap index.
Hmm. But did you say that the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ don't follow that quite the same?
Yeah, if you look at those two, the charts don't look the same as the Dow and the Russell.
That is very curious.
I mean, they look very similar. Everything's been going up, but it's the little kind of the nuances in there. And, you know, for example, if you look at a chart of the Dow, Kim, over the last week, it's kind of stalled out. I mean, mm-hmm. it moved up and then it got to the new high, and it's just got this little tiny downward slant on it. Over the last seven trading days, you go to the chart of the Russell 2000 or the S&P 600, which is also small caps, looks very, very similar. I mean, they look the same, while the S&P 500 doesn't look like that. The NASDAQ's chart doesn't look like that. So I don't know if that's helpful, but it is interesting.
It is super interesting. And while you were talking about this, and I was thinking about the DNC convention, we don't know what's going to happen in this next election cycle. I mean, there is so much work to do. And I think the market is looking very optimistic right now. But if things did not turn out from an optimistic standpoint, I think that, it might be good that people at this particular point in time take a look. We talked about it yesterday. A possible defensive position, or I think that this is really an important time for people to sit down with you, Jason, and your colleagues to assess risks, to take a look into the future, maybe put some defense mechanisms in there. I just think that makes some sense right now, Jason.
Well, I think it does, and don't forget, we're open for business. You don't have to do a Zoom meeting. You don't have to do a phone meeting. You can make an appointment and come into the office. Meet with, one of our advisors. You got to wear a mask when you come into the building. But once you're in our office, it's your choice. I mean, you can wear your mask if you want. You can choose not to wear it. But, the point is we are open for normal face-to-face meetings at this point. So if you're not technologically savvy or if doing things over, Zoom with a mic, I wouldn't want to meet somebody, especially for a new relationship that way. And I'm sure there's other folks like me.
And so people can make an appointment with you. They can go to airpresidential.com. That's AIRpresidential.com for more information. Or the phone number, Natalie will be at the switchboard at 7:30, is 303-694-1600. 303-694-1600. Jason, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right, Kim, thanks.
And when we come back, we'll be talking with Rachel Gable. She is an expert in the regarding the agriculture industry. She writes for the Fence Post. And I had a question for her. I was talking to a farmer within this last week, and I think we'd all heard these stories about farmers having to basically just kill their hogs because they couldn't get them to market during the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption. And I wanted to ask Rachel, what does that mean for our food supply? So we'll be right back.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter where you get the first look at all of our guests as well as our most recent op-eds and Sounding Off with Kim Munson podcasts. And go over to Facebook and give us a like as well. On the line with me is Rachel Gable. She is a writer for the Fence Post. She is an expert regarding the agriculture industry, which is the fourth largest industry here in Colorado. And we first got connected when Patty had found this piece that it looks like Governor Polis is doing things that could actually hurt our agriculture industry here in Colorado. And so, Rachel Gable, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me, Kim.
My question, I was talking with a farmer last week, and I remember hearing, seeing pictures back early on during the COVID-19 Wuhan virus reaction disruption that pork producers were having to just kill their hogs because they couldn't get them to market. And this farmer said that there is a specific window when hogs are ready to go to market and that there's not a lot of other time on that. And I was a little shocked. So explain that to us, Rachel.
Sure. The hog business is very efficient, and that's what consumers have wanted the business to be. And so to be efficient, it's literally hogs in, hogs out. So producers know exactly what their rations are, how many days it takes to get them to their optimal weight, and then they ship the hogs that are ready to go to be harvested just as pigs are being born. And so those barns are always full, and it's just an amazing balance. So when there was no processing capacity or slowed processing capacity, there was nowhere to go with the heavier hogs. So there were some sows that were not bred. There were some sows that were aborted. There were some classes of hogs. Some of those were weaners. Some were feeders. Some were heavy that were being euthanized. Now, we may never know what those numbers were because they're not reported to the USDA. The only real feel we would have for those numbers is based on how many of those farmers applied for relief dollars based on the number of hogs they had to destroy. And since it was all on farm, I don't know that we'll ever have a good number of that. Now, the processing slowdown on the hog side is actually higher today than it was this time last year because we're running about 40% capacity on Saturdays. So that gives us 6 days a week of processing. So I think we're going to see limited supply issues coming from this, but certainly hog prices are still just horribly low, and these guys are really trying to recover. And of course, in the Midwest, they were just hit by this straight line wind storm, so it's just been one hit after another for agriculture.
Well, and you've got an op-ed that we're going to be rolling out this weekend in our newsletter regarding a whole bunch of information on that. And you mentioned the processors. And, you know, I found it kind of interesting during this whole COVID-19 thing that many of these governors were willing to just come in and basically try to shut down some of the food processors or the meat processors. And I'm thinking, that could be a real problem regarding our food supply. What's your thoughts on that, Rachel?
Sure. It is a huge problem. It's just like the pork. I mean, it's very balanced. And, of course, some of the disruption was based on panic buying at the stores and having those shelves empty and just the logistics of getting the trucks there and getting it unloaded and getting the shelves stocked. So we kind of saw it on that end. We, of course, have a frozen boxed beef supply. We have some in the wings. We have some there in the warehouses. But it was a matter of getting it there. Coming back to processors, when those processors were being closed down or the chain speeds were slowed down, capacity was slowed down, what that left was heavy cattle in the feed yards. So they were needed. They had to switch them to a more of a holding ration, like a maintenance ration instead of a gaining ration, so that they weren't getting too big for the processors to be able to handle. So with that slowed capacity, the beef processing is really amazing too, because it is so incredibly efficient, but it's one of those things that can't be done by robots. It has to be done by these skilled workers. So when those workers are nervous about getting sick, or they are sick, or they're calling in to work for whatever reason, their kids aren't at school because the schools are closed, that really, they've got to switch people over from the cut floor to the kill floor, and it just slows everything down. And as it slows it down, the finished product isn't coming out as quickly as it needs to be.
Well, how does that affect then the producers? Because if they didn't apply for some kind of relief from the government, and Patty had found a piece from the Epoch Times that the USDA had expanded its aid to farmers and also specialty crop producers. So the federal government did come in with some relief to try to help these people, because, I mean, if you are a pork producer and you have to basically euthanize a portion of your crops, you don't make any money on that. I mean, this is going to start to squeeze the producers from what I can see.
Oh, yeah, the producers are incredibly squeezed right now. And that's on top of higher feed costs for feeding these cattle that should have gone to shackle space long ago that are bigger. And on top of ethanol production being shut down because California, which is the major ethanol market, obviously wasn't needing as much ethanol. So dry distiller's grain, wet distiller's grain, both byproducts of ethanol production, were unavailable to feed yards. So they're having to find different feed sources. It's just been kind of a perfect storm, if you will, for producers.
Or imperfect storm, maybe.
It's been a hot mess.
Yeah.
And then, of course, add a drought that's causing guys to early wean and have to feed cattle. It's just, it's one thing after another for producers. And certainly I would not be exaggerating to say that lamb, beef, and hog producers are certainly suffering right now.
And you just said something, shackle space or something. What is that? What was that word that you said?
Sure. Shackle space is basically just harvest capacity, getting those cattle processed, hanging carcasses.
Okay. And, you know, I think that consumers really have taken our farmers and ranchers for granted. You know, to go to the grocery store and to just have all these different choices, we really have taken it for granted. And one of the things with the COVID-19 Wuhan virus reaction disruption is we've realized that, you know, some of the real heroes are the people, as you mentioned, the truckers that have gotten, you know, get our products to our stores, the people there that are working those stores, the farmers and the ranchers. And we've seen some politicization of things coming out of the Colorado State House and the governor's office that could actually adversely affect these farmers and ranchers that are working so hard to make sure that our citizens are fed. So let's go to break. When we come back, let's talk about some of those policies, Rachel Gable, that could affect our farmers and ranchers adversely. We'll be right back.
Predovich & Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich & Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich & Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
Now more than ever, it is important to have independent voices bringing truth and clarity to the issues facing us, our families, our communities, our state, our nation, and our world. The Kim Munson Show is one of those important voices. Kim is a truly independent entrepreneur. She purchases her broadcast time, which gives her total freedom in production of the show and scheduling of guests. If you'd like to support The Kim Munson Show, go to her website, kimmunson.com, and click on the contribute button under Kim's picture. Kim greatly appreciates your help and support.
Welcome back to The Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You will see Rachel Gable's new op-ed, and that will be rolled out on Sunday. And go over to Facebook and give us a like as well. Before we get back to Rachel Gable, who is an expert in the agriculture industry, as well as she writes for the Fence Post. As you all know, I buy my airtime, which is great because it gives us full editorial control on what we bring to you each morning. And so the sponsors that I work with, I can highly recommend each and every one of them. And one of my new sponsors you heard was Metropolitan Total Property Care, and then also Castlegate Knives, which is a family-owned business located right here in Sedalia, Colorado. And they have a wide spectrum of knives, from collectors to military knives, knives for the sportsman, gift sets for weddings. It is a really unique and beautiful store. And so be sure and check out castlegate.com. That's castlegate.com. Their website is under construction to get all these products there. So I'd also recommend that you just go out and take a look, because it's absolutely fascinating. It's a great store, and I'm really pleased to have them as a new partner. So Rachel Gable, writer for the Fence Post. We have talked about the risk to our producers, our farmers and our ranchers. There's drought, there's Mother Nature, there's markets, there was the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption. All these things make it difficult. And then you can add on policy down at the State House and the governor's office, and it makes it really difficult for these people that are out there working 60, 70, 80 hours a week to make sure that America is fed. And so let's talk a little bit about some of those policies. I know this wolf issue is one that's of great concern to you.
Oh, yeah. Having the wolf on the ballot literally raises the hair on the back of my neck when I think about it. This is the ultimate ballot box biology. The Colorado Parks and Wildlife has repeatedly said that, first off, there's wolves already here coming in from Wyoming. And they've also said that this is not an ideal place for wolves. They, you know, it worked well, I guess. They say it worked well in Yellowstone, but we're looking at 6 million people here. So it's just a different geography. So there's just not room for them, and they're already coming here. So to put that in the hands of voters who can kind of get swept up in the romance of the howl and that we're missing something from the night sky and the mountains. You know, it's all very, very picturesque as it's being presented. But the bottom line is that we're bringing in major predators to the state that are going to cause some human interactions and some livestock interactions, and that's a whole lot of problems, and they're affecting the people who don't have much of a voice in it. Rural voters vote like their lives depend upon it.
It does.
But they're pretty serious. They're patriotic, and they believe in voting. They believe in the process. But boy, we're outnumbered just by bolder voters. So we have a lot of people that are making decisions that affect us, but don't have the same goals in mind as we do. So it's a tough thing when you complain about agriculture with your mouth full.
Well, and that's why we need to bring these issues forward. Just a couple of things. If in fact a gray wolf kills livestock, it's difficult for the producer, for the farmer or the rancher to actually recoup those losses, isn't it?
Yeah, they have dollars set aside for that, but they have to prove that it was a wolf, and depredation is certainly an issue, and it's possible to get paid for that. I don't know what that process is, but it sounds like it's kind of complicated. But beyond that, you know, heifers and cows that are constantly having the stress of the predators around them are not going to breed. they're not going. They might not be gaining weight the way they should. Stress affects cattle just like it does people. So there's more than just wolves killing, being predators. That's what they do.
Yeah, and gray wolves, they kill for sport, not just for food, right?
That's what I understand, yeah.
Okay. So one other thing that I wanted to talk about, and that is policy. And what we have seen from the governor's office and how it could affect our farmers and ranchers. And we talked about this a few weeks ago, and I've thought some more about it. And that is putting people on boards and commissions that actually don't like the industry of the board or commission that they're being appointed to. And that ultimately can become very detrimental because they're bringing a bias to those boards and commissions. We talked specifically about the Colorado Veterinarian Board. And these are things that are all happening so subtly underneath the surface. If you're not paying attention, you don't realize it. But you have to ask that question, why would Governor Polis do that? I think that's a really important question, Rachel Gable.
Well, I can't answer why Governor Polis would do that. There's certainly been some thinly veiled attacks on agriculture come from his office, from his unelected partner, and certainly from the State House in general. That particular appointment that we were talking about, we talked about it a little bit, but if your listeners missed it, Ellen Kessler is just deeply opposed to animal agriculture, and she was appointed to the Colorado Board of Veterinary Medicine. And what is troubling about that is that she will be asked to guide and enforce professional standards for veterinary practitioners and will help make amends and adopt reasonable rules that govern their conduct. And, of course, some of those veterinarians are very important to the livestock industry as food animal and large animal veterinarians. We have one of the top veterinary teaching hospitals in the country at CSU, so it's certainly a poke poking the bear, putting her on that board. I did send a letter out to the entire Senate yesterday, as well as to Governor Polis, Kate Siegel Shimko, who is in charge of the boards and commissions, Polis himself, Commissioner Greensburg, Auditor Diane Ray, and like I said, the whole Senate. And I included in there about 13,000 signatures from stakeholders who were opposed to her appointment, as well as 71 pages of comments. And that was sent to the entire Senate. Jerry Sonnenberg, a senator from Sterling, texted me, said that he received it. And then I had, Senator Brittany Pedersen's aide say that she had received it. And so far, that's the only thing I've heard. So her appointment, Kessler's appointment, she'll have a confirmation hearing during the upcoming legislative session. And then even a unanimous no vote in that committee, whatever committee that's assigned to, still would have to be voted on by the entire Senate. So hopefully agriculture will keep showing up and standing up for themselves.
And again, how many signatures were on this?
About 13,000.
How did you accomplish that?
We put it online for people to be able to sign. And I talked about it a little bit in the Fence Post, and I talked about it on social media, and I've had lots and lots of phone calls and texts and messages lately. But Kessler has made several derogative comments about agriculture in general, and then, of course, she made a comment about 4-H teaching kids that animal lives don't matter, and that certainly struck a nerve when it was made during the height of county fair season. So there's a lot of people. Agriculture affects everyone in Colorado. It's a multi-billion-dollar industry, and it puts food on the plate. And it's if you're eating organic, vegetarian, grass-fed, conventional-raised, whatever it is that you're eating, agriculture produces it.
Well, and people should have the choice what they want instead of government coming in and through policy, rules, regulations, start to limit those choices. It's so subtle. But yet, on the other hand, Rachel Gable, I think that all this stuff that has been percolating underneath the surface, the veil is off on it, and we need to be paying attention. The COVID-19 Wuhan virus, when people went to the market and some of the cupboard was bare, if you will, it got people's attention. And so we need to make sure that we are not putting in policies that are going to make it difficult for people that are out there working these long hours to provide food for our table. I think it's just so important, Rachel.
I agree. You know, these extremists and these folks that are working against agriculture are very patient, and they're willing to take small bites. But those small bites add up. And, you know, the egg bill recently was a great example of this. In 5 years, the only eggs that will be sold in the state of Colorado will be from cage-free environments. That was extremist-backed, and I think it's a shame. It is embarrassing that the state would allow, you know, extremists to strong-arm their way in and force legislation down the throats of consumers. You could go to the grocery store during this whole COVID mess, and their eggs may all be sold out, but there were still cage-free eggs there. People ought to be able to make that decision, and producers ought to be able to make that decision.
Most definitely, Rachel Gable, and they most definitely should have the opportunity to make that choice. And so, Rachel Gable, we'll have you on a regular basis because we take it for granted when we go to the market, and as you mentioned, that there's eggs and there's meat and there's, you know, fruits, vegetables, all that. We take it for granted, and we need to make sure that we don't let policy get in the way of affecting efficient, affordable food supply. So, Rachel Gable, it's great to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
And that was Rachel Gable, and she writes for the Fence Post, and we will keep her on a regular basis on the show as well. So our quote for today is from Aristotle. He says, "We are what we repeatedly do. Excellence, then, is not an act, but a habit." So my friends, today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you. And God bless America.